There he is.
Hey, Shane.
Hey, Zach, how you doing?
I just need a couple more moments, please.
Are you?
A loaded question.
Well, I didn't mean to load it. My apologies.
Off the bat with the tough ones, huh?
Yeah, it is a tough one. Well, you didn't sign up for things to be easy with me. I'm a real ball breaker when it comes to questions.
Right now, the world is like on fire, and at least in my world, because there's a hack going on.
Oh,
Next
really?
question. Log4j, it's a logging mechanism for Java, and it's used in almost all enterprise software. It's a foundational component built back in, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, which has been barely updated and maintained from some like three-man crew in Nebraska, barely supported, but everybody's been using it for forever, and now it's being exploited across the world.
The
So
0 day thing, yeah, right.
yeah, the 0 days, okay, so you're aware of it then,
Yeah.
probably.
Oh, I feel like I got an email from like Cloudflare or something that said 0 day exploit. And I was like,
Everybody's
that's not
impacted
good.
by it
Zero
now.
day is not good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. So it's anybody and their kid can basically go and execute a string of text and hack a major vendor. And Amazon went down yesterday.
Really?
Any major cloud was down. Yeah, we lost. We a big part of our service is on Amazon. Amazon West went down. Things I probably shouldn't say, but Amazon West went down. We're safe and pretty secure right now, but insurance company. It's just one of those moments where it's chaotic for sometimes not good reasons, and then people don't even care about priority. It's about optics. So like,
Yeah.
what I do is I work on test. I own all testing software, which is not a production environment tool,
Okay.
right? So it's like when it comes to security and risk, it's like if I was a customer of any, so I wouldn't care what it is. It's like I'm going to fix my production systems first. I'm not going to fix testing systems, in non-production environments. And but there's really not a lot of balance and logic and sense in conversations that happen right now. It's just panic. It's all about the optics, like fix everything. It's like, well, you'd have to be hacked by your own people internally because no one has access to this stuff. It's all behind firewall. So I'm burning up just tons of my engineering resources and efforts to fix stuff that should never be touched by anybody. It's like we could fix this and we could fix it in a meaningful time. We could plan it, but it's a lot of it's about optics, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, that is brutal. Sorry
It's
to hear
kind of
that.
one of those things where when you're ready, and from talking with me, when you're ready doing the job of three or four people and undermanned and understaffed, and then you have that straw that breaks the camel's back. This is just overapplied and overstretched us. And then it got me to the point where I was on a couple of calls, and I'm just like, it wasn't unprofessionally per se, but I'm on the call with a couple of leaders, and I'm just like, well, here are the 10 major strategies you want me to build and execute over the next quarter. That will be, some of them are due in January, which I haven't even started. And both basically some of these, organizational strategies are, they would be a one person's entire career. You know what I mean? Like you'd hire a person to come in with a lot of experience to do this as their entire career. And I have like 10 of these. And I'm like, I haven't even started these things. I'll have to work all Christmas to do this. They will fall by the wayside, or just knowing me, I'll probably come through and I'll deliver on part of it. I said, but there's no people to work on them because we're in this great resignation, and we're treating like my area right now as a second class citizen. And it's super frustrating to me because I have the highest adopted capability in our organization by our customers. So it shouldn't be a second class citizen. It's the number one impact to all of our sales whenever it's wrong. So instead of like saying it drives sales, it's actually the number one impact to why we don't get sales. it's critical. You know, we build the business case. It's like, it's not a second class citizen. And, you know, so I beat the drum, make the business case. Everybody goes, yeah. And then we go and we invest in these features where it's just like, there's no return on investments. It doesn't bring in new sales. We staff it with, you know, just a ton of resources, ton of managers and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, it shows clear priority. It doesn't drive organizational objectives. It doesn't help us update our customers faster, act like a cloud company. And so I got frustrated in the call and I just laid all this out. I'm like, there it is. You know, I did everything short of just saying the obvious writing that was on the wall with my approach, where it's like, I'm not going to do things that are not valuable. And if you continue to press it and treat it this way, I'm out the door. And it was shortly after that, you know, I was approached by three executive assistants, like, please set a meeting with this executive, please set a meeting by this executive, and please set a meeting by this other. You know, some of them are this week, some of them are tomorrow, some of them are this week. Some of them are within the first week of January. I'm off the last 2 weeks of the year. So it's like, it's either today, tomorrow, or the first week of the year. It's just, to me, it's like, we're in the tough times. I understand the tough times, but I don't know. You saw my emails. You see my perspective on life. I could, you know, I could always hit like the F it button and be like, I don't know. I could just like not do anything for 6 months or a year and be like, okay, maybe that was a bad decision. You know, like, okay.
You're probably looking at, as you already know, options between F it and do everything they say, you know.
Well, I can't do everything they say in a way that actually is meaningful to them.
Yeah. You know what, sure. I mean? So what I would suggest, well, let me ask, do you want some input around this or are you just venting?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've been venting for a while and that's not productive.
I'll give you some input and you can take it or leave it. Yeah. So what are these meetings? Why are they wanting all these meetings? Is it because they all got scared and they want to talk to you one-on-one now?
Yeah. I mean, the person who has the most importance in that hierarchy of people, of executives who set meetings with me, he shot me a note at like 11 and he said, in brevity, he's like, okay, you've tried this for a couple of months now. You have a look at the landscape. I want to hear your perspective on things. Right. Reach out to this person. They'll set a meeting between us and blah, blah, blah. And if you go back to, you know, understanding like where I was coming from with that one guy to where I'm going to with this next guy and how that's created like a VP, I was, you know, supposed to be, you know, going into a VP and then like, I should be building an organization here to carve out the things that I'm doing end to end in this value chain if it's going to be done correctly. And I feel like this person's eventually, because this one person that I'm going to talk to, this person who's highest on the food chain is going to be like, well, what do we need to actually do this right? Because everybody else that you're talking to in between me, right, they don't even understand end to end what's happening here. This guy does understand it to a degree, which is why he asked me to come across. And I think for the most part, we align on vision. And I think he's going to be like, what do you need to just to do what you need to do? Who cares about who you piss off? Just give me some names to rearrange the organization. We're in crisis mode. We're just going to rebuild this thing. Like, you know, stop worrying about who you offend. Just restructure in your mind. What does this thing need to look like?
You have an answer for that?
I do, if I can say it safely.
What do you want to say?
What I want to say is that there's this current team that I came from that would actually have to come across with me based on the behaviors and what they do. Because they're not part of the delivery component. They're not part of a product component. They're part of a strategy component. and they're actually defining all of the requirements of how the product should be built. And they can't do that after the product's being built. That's hindsight, it's retrospective. And basically all they're doing is filling in plugging gaps. Now they need to come closer. They need to continue to shift left. And so they need to shift left and be part of what we're doing. I need to get some, and I know I can't get product managers quick enough for what I'm doing, but I actually have 7 products. In the interim, what I can do is I can get some actual program managers staffed in between to fill the operations. And I can actually show where that is in the interim. And one key product manager on an overall framework to fill a gap, because I have product managers for other areas like performance and digital and whatever, right? And I can lay that out and say, here's going to be an organizational structure where we can do this. And I need to talk to them about the difference between where I was in my current world, where I had accountability and authority, and that was matched with actual financial accountability and authority, where I managed my own budget. And then in this new world, I don't have any budget to do any of these things.
Okay. So here's the feeling that I have about you. Welcome, Robin. The feeling that I have about you is that you're a man sitting on a huge pile of cash and you're concerned about spending, you know, like $5. So let me explain what I mean by that. You know, the only currency you have in any organization is credibility. Mm-hmm. And you've clearly established your credibility in spades. And you've been building it and building it and building it and building it. And then there's one other thing that you have in organizational life that gives you clout. And it's not about credibility. It's about the ease with which you can walk away, the fearlessness with which you can exit something. It gives you enormous amounts of power. So you have a lot you can spend right now. You're in a hard position. You're in an untenable position. You're in an unsustainable position. And I don't mean unsustainable in that, oh, you're not gifted enough to figure it out. You're gifted enough to figure it out.
That's actually the language I use with them. I told them I'm in an untenable position, right?
Good. So, awesome. So you absolutely need to go in and let him know, here's what's required that is in the best interest of the organization. I understand you probably have lots of other trade-offs that I don't have line of sight on that you're trying to manage against. But from where I sit and my vantage point, here are the things that you're going to have to decide, and here are the choices and the trade-offs and the consequences. Whatever you decide, I respect. Whatever you decide will obviously have implications for any decisions I have to make. And you do again what you did before, which is you imply that if things don't go the way you want, you're probably not going to be around. You just don't say it directly.
Right.
And if he says, well, what do you mean? What decisions? You say, well, I've already indicated this is an untenable and unsustainable position for me to be in. So, you know, nope. I'll have to look at my options. And you just keep being indirect and coy, and he'll know what you mean. And if you have built the kind of credibility that I believe you have, and if you have the kind of power and clout that I think you have, you're going to get pretty much everything you ask for. And if you don't get most of what you ask for, you should probably start transitioning out. Not because you're not capable, but because your life is too short. You have enough capacity to do things that you enjoy in life. And this is no longer fun for you. It hasn't been that fun.
Shane, and I already know this because of his minions, these two VPs between me, which I have complete respect for, right? When I call them minions, I don't mean to, I'm just, you know, instead of throwing around names, they want me in their organizations, right?
Well, of course they do. Everybody wants you in their organization.
Right.
What else is new?
Performing these roles relative to their organizations, right? Product manager or whatever.
Sorry, doesn't work. Doesn't fit.
What I'm trying to do with this guy, this chief, and when I position it to him, it will be across multiple organizations, developing my own value chain end to end. owning my own products, delivering my own products, making sure they resource their staff, their education, their enablement for them, et cetera. And that's going to change the way that we see these things. And I believe that's what he's always wanted, which is why he brought me in, because I was the only person in the company that actually had worked and done this end to end across these value streams. And these other people have just been sole careers growing in their value or in their whatever they went to school for and whatever, right? And so they, you know, when I talk to them, they don't know how to handle that either, right? I had talked to this one guy I report to now who's really good at what he does is he's a vice president of product management. And he goes, Zach, have you ever written this shit down before? He's like, you do all the resourcing for every single project in your company and on this topic, like you have 500 customers and there's all these, you know, I forget what it is, like $40 million in, you know, resources that are going out the door on a weekly basis. He's like, tying them into these conversations and making sure that the education is going on and being built out in the methodology and the pricing for not only the resources, but the software. It's like, he's like, couldn't believe it. He's like, how does this even happen in our company? It's like, he doesn't understand the value chain of how things are built end to end. And for me, I'm just at a point with it where I'm like, I'm not going to give up these things. I'm never going to stop thinking about these things. It doesn't matter what organization I'm in. I'm not going to be part of organization A, B, C, or D and not think about the end-to-end value chain of what our company does, right? It's like, I know the value chain end-to-end and I can focus on one thing for a while, but I'm either going to do all of it and focus on fine-tuning all of it or I'm not. Or I'll just be a good little soldier and march in a direction wherever they want me to do that for a while. That's fine. And I've done that, but I'm not going to continue to do it in the way that they're asking me to do it now. Right. So that's the kind of conversation I'm positioning in that regards of that, of where he's asking me to go with this position. I'm saying, look at, and I'm going to phrase it differently, obviously, but it would have to go across all of it as a value chain. It's not going to be in the organizational structure that he has with these silos. It's going to be breaking apart these silos. It's going to be it's going to be a cross-functional organization that drives the value chain versus being what the role is. And I don't know how that's going to fit. They might say, look, that's where we need to be, but we don't know how to do that in our org. We don't know how to even set that up.
They may not know how to set that up. It's quite an art, and it requires the ability to do change management well, which they may not be able to do. But none of that matters. The how isn't your immediate concern. It is possible. Anything is possible. You can do anything. People just have to have the know-how and the will, and then they can make it happen. And there are costs and consequences to making it happen. And so the conversation isn't that you have the right answer. It's that you are out of balance in an organizational polarity. And that matrixed organizations create certain things that siloed organizations can't. And there are certain things that siloed organizations do really well that matrixed organizations don't. And so you will trade out one set of frustrations for another set of frustrations, which is totally valid and legitimate. You want to be trading out the frustrations that have the least impact on business objectives. So the pitch is not, I've got a way to fix all of our problems. The pitch is, I've got a way to create some new problems, but the problems we're probably wanting to have. And I have a way to solve the problems that we can't afford to have.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think if you frame it in that way, that it's not a battle and that there is a calibrating tool that goes on in organizational design that is not black or white. It's understanding what are those things that you know need to have a certain kind of, it's really not that complicated. It's no different than HR and accounting go all the way across all organizations. It's called a leveraged function instead of a focused function. So that's how all organizations are. But often what happens is they assume that the engines are the focus functions and the support are the leverage functions. Mm-hmm. But there is a way to turn an engine into a leveraged function that cuts across all organizational things. So that is possible, and you add a new rung on the kind of a row in that matrix. So just helping them think in that metaphoric term, yeah, they're gonna be different conversations. Yes, different tools, yes, different accountabilities, all those things you're going to have conversations about. But conceptually, it's not that hard. You guys solve way harder problems than that, you know, before lunch. The second problem, cultural problems.
So what? the problems, yeah. So if it's a tech problem, it's a whatever problem, I agree. Like those are actually the easy problems. The people problems and the culture problems are hard. And the reason that I'm saying the things that I'm saying is because that's actually what I'm driving to fix is culture problems. And when I say culture problems, is like we're taking industries, insurance industries, and we're saying that, as an example, like, hey, QA is dead. Quality assurance is dead. No one does it anymore. You don't offshore stuff to India to do testing anymore. Your developers must own authoring, automation, and testing themselves. That has to happen in order to change the behavior of how quality is built into products. You can't test quality. It has to be built in. Quality is value, and that's how you move faster, and that's how the cloud works, and blah, blah, blah. Okay. It's like, all right, so you might not care about that, but that's changing culture. All right. So you can do that in your product development departments. And then when you get out to like delivering a product, okay, so then your customer has to do the same thing. It's like, well, then you tell your customer how they're going to behave. They have to really drink that Kool-Aid if they're going to behave the same way. Well, what about all of your partners who are also going to act the same way? Think like Salesforce. Like they have their consultants out there implementing their software, you know, same type of model. And you have hundreds of thousands of partners doing that on hundreds of thousands of customers. So you're changing an ecosystem that you have operating in 60 countries with hundreds of thousands of people, right? And so driving that cultural change, you know, that's what I'm accountable for as well, right? And so like that's where I'm pointing, as I make these changes and eliminate roles and resources and how they can behave and their methodology and the operations, like that's why I'm pointing at this. I'm like, I have to do that from the heart of this across the value chain. I'm not just going to give up the end of it and how they deliver it, because then what I do here breaks down over there and my adoption fails. And the person who just builds the product and does that blindly, in my opinion, is ignorant to how the product is adopted. And they can look at metrics all day, but they just don't know.
Yeah, so I would say that that set of problems you're facing, it isn't actually that hard, or maybe I should say it's not that hard for me. You know, that is the thing that I do. So, you know, if you take this on, I would probably tell you you would be benefited by some outside support greater than a program like this. So, and I don't know that I'm available. I'd have to look at when and how much and all that. But I do work with private clients sometimes. I'm in one now. I have room for probably one more. And I tend to not like to take them on very much. But if you want to talk about that, I'd be happy to talk about that too. I'm also happy to keep talking just in this context. It's fine. But yeah. One thought for you is, first, if you can just get them to say effectively, this is serious, I want to take it on and take it seriously, then there's a way to solve all that. It's very solvable. And it may not be your expertise, but I can help you solve that. So just keep that in the back of your mind, that there are ways to make this easier. The first thing that I'm interested in, though, isn't so much that. I'm actually interested in your well-being. Because right now, you know, I think the thing that I feel about you is that you happen to have a tremendous amount of skill, capacity, and talent, but you're really unhappy. You're really frustrated. And so you need to get to a place where you're feeling really good again. That's the highest priority. And if you're feeling really good because they've reorged something and they figured out to say yes to what you're suggesting, awesome. But if they keep dragging their feet and saying, ah, we can't do that, that's not the priority, it's not going to work that way, I honestly don't think that this is a good role for you. I think you've given it a good try. I think you've really worked hard at it. I would tell you, this is what I do for a living. I benchmark people about whether or not they're bullshitting me and they have done the hard work to make a role work for them, or whether they shouldn't be doing that. And so here's the metaphor that I'll use. When I learned, you know, the first time I went on my first canoe trip when I was in high school, and we did a 2-mile portage, if you're in Canada, we had the Duluth packs. You know what Duluth packs are, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was like, I'm in high school. I'm not that strong yet. And I'm hauling this 70-pound Duluth pack 2 miles, about mile one. I was like, I'm done with this. I hate this. This is awful. And halfway through, the camp counselor comes by and he's like, why aren't you using the tump line? And I'm like, the what? He's like, the tump line. I'm like, what's a tump line? He goes, here. And he reaches out on my Duluth pack and he pulls out this leather strap with buckles on either side. And he attaches it right here on the pack. And the strap goes across my forehead. And the forehead creates all of this relief from my shoulders, even though it looks crazy. And I hike the rest of the way, no problem. So a huge part of what I do is I provide people tump lines. I'm like, you're a leader. You're carrying heavy stuff. I can't remove the things from your pack, but I can help you carry it a better way. I've given you the tump line. I've given you the waist strap. I've given you all the things. You've executed all those things. You have your own. I'm not saying I'm the one doing it all. I'm just saying for my part, I've given everything I know to give. You've done, as far as I can tell, all the things I would have told you to do. And it isn't getting lighter. And that should tell you the pack is the wrong pack. You need to set it down and repack it or try a new one. And that's what this conversation with your VP is. The pack doesn't work. I can't carry this pack. It's way too heavy. It's way too cumbersome. It's the wrong shape. I can't fit through the trees. This doesn't work.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, is if it's the pack or is it the trail? Like, am I coming to, and I wrote that to you in the email, am I coming to a conclusion that I don't like the trail I'm at, am I on? Or am I coming to the conclusion that some of the executives are right, that I'm working around, that I should just focus on one of these existing paths that are in that company on, you know, hey, come just be part of my org. You know,
you're not going to be happy with that.
I'm not going to be happy with that. I know that.
No, so you're not asking a question. You have the answer to your question.
I know that, because it's honestly, it's not the right thing for that company either, right? And
They know that. Not only will you not be happy, it's bad for the company. You can't do something that's bad for the company and you don't enjoy it. It'd be a waste of your
money. Let me be honest about this. I've, since 19 years old, right? So I've showed you a little bit about my backstory about being a troublemaker. My first job not being a troublemaker, well, like getting out of jail and everything else. 19 years old, I joined this company, and then I got to travel the world and do everything with this company. I joined this company first by being a customer of theirs, working on their products. And then I joined as a partner because I couldn't join them directly because of non-competes. And then it took me a while to work into this company and join them as a vendor. And then once I actually joined them, I've not worked for anything else. I always tried to work for this company. This company was like my Google, right? So once I got into there, I worked through with them. I've been promoted like, I don't know, 7-9 times. I've worked my way like all the way to the top in different organizations throughout them. Like, to me, something like that would be like getting a divorce, probably even worse.
Oh, right? I see. Okay. Like, got it. That helps me. So
I love my company and I love my work.
Okay. So that helps me hear a little through slightly different ears. All you have to say,
you know, there's like, you know, tens of thousands of people in this company and we're $15 or $20 billion or whatever we're at now. Like, I love my company.
Okay. So let me suggest an alternative then. Instead of, we either do this or I'm leaving. All you have to do is go to this guy and say, the current path doesn't work. It's a dead end. I can't survive it. I'm not going to be happy doing it. And it's not good for the company. So we have to find an alternative way. This way doesn't work. So, and here's specifically what I mean by this way. I cannot live in these two guys' organizations. Can't work. I know they want me. It can't work. I can't do it. I tried it. I gave it my all. It's not working. You know, in your career, you get a six shooter, right? You get so many bullets to use. It's time to use one of your bullets. You don't have an endless supply of them, but this is the time to use one, where you basically say, I can't do that thing. It's not good. It's a bad idea. It's going the wrong direction. I won't do it. And here's the thing that I think is a better direction. And if he says, gosh, you're crazy, there's no way we can do that, then have in your mind a couple of options that are suboptimal, but still acceptable. If you want to stay in the company, if you love the company, then we will create options that are suboptimal. Don't present those options. Start with the first one, get his read, And then if he's like, that is exactly right, let me go to work on that, good. And if it's not, if it's, I think there's this reason we can't do that, and this, and you go, okay, I anticipated that was a possibility. Here's another option, less ideal, one I could live with. Try that. How does that feel? No, that's still not working. And then give them a third. So if you can think through three options, people love options, that work for you. So that's the most important thing, that it works for you. And like I said, one of the things that you may consider, if he actually says yes to what you're suggesting, you probably, it is in your interest to get some support, like more intense support than I've currently given in a context like this. So that's a private engagement. There's somebody at my door who's, I need to sign something. Give me 1 second. Sorry about that.
Hey, Robin.
Hey. This sounds
like I need to sign a few. Check it out. Okay, sorry about that. So does that resonate for you?
It does. You know, the three options, that stuff is obvious. Most of the stuff is obvious. It's just, you know, needing to talk through it as it usually is.
Yeah, look, more than anything, I just wanted to give you the validation that you've done everything you can. And even if you kind of knew that, it's helpful to just hear from the outside. You've done everything you can. And there is a level of complexity to what you're proposing, but it's very doable. And all it takes is someone with the will. That's it. If he has the will, you have a way, I have a way, it can be done.
Yeah, it'll be good. I think I have one conversation tomorrow where they might, try to provide some immediate remediations, but I don't think that's the solution. And then when I get back in January, that's when I'll have a conversation about it. And that'll give me some time for, you know, the last 2 weeks of the year to think about those options.
Yeah, I think that's smart. And go ahead and plant the seeds for them. Like, hey, this is what I need. This is what I want to do. And I want to present it to you in the new year.
I think even tomorrow, even with his minions, I think it's appropriate to plant the seeds with them.
Yeah.
Let that propagate over the time period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I want to jump over to Robin. How are you?
Good.
That's what I asked him, but it was a dangerous question I learned.
Yeah. Generally pretty good. I didn't really necessarily come in with anything that I wanted to unpack or double click on, but as I was sitting here listening, I guess it's more of like an observation that I had last week that I might just want to talk through, but I do remember you saying that after the exercise you took me through to kind of like pay attention to things and the color purple and stuff like that. And so I guess I was just wondering before I jump into wanting to talk, just think about some of the observations that I've had in the last week. Is there anything that, like, are there questions or things that can help me kind of come to maybe some of the things that we talked about last time, just so I don't miss it? My head's like all over the place. So that's why I'm like, are there guiding questions that you might have to kind of rehash that topic again or no?
Yeah, I have one guiding question. What do you want? Should sound familiar. Yeah, here's the deal. The heart is really, really simple. The mind is incredibly complex and constantly changing and loves complexity. The heart loves simplicity. It's a very, very simple intelligence. And as a consequence, it's far more powerful than the mind, because simplicity on the far side of complexity is worth far more than the complexity itself. So the simplicity of just your desire, paying attention to what you want. Now, you've got a husband, you've got a kid, one kid, two kids? You have more than one? Just the one?
Yeah.
Two? You've got a very young child. I know that. You've got a boss, several bosses. You've got all kinds of things that are vying, that want you to want things. Everybody else wants you to want certain things. And your job is to be interested in what they want you to want, but ultimately to be guided by what you want and then negotiate accordingly. So do you feel like you lost touch with that in the last week since we spoke last?
No, but I definitely think that not kind of going back and doing that exercise of getting quiet and listening to my heart has definitely had me more like processing it mentally than like going back inward.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like I find myself thinking about some of the things that I said and then processing it up here. It's like, what does that mean? You know, instead of processing it in here. So maybe that's more just probably what I need to do more regularly. Cause it starts to, I'm trying to like solve and that's not necessarily, or I'm trying to figure out what it's trying to tell me.
So this is a fairly advanced practice, what I'm going to suggest. And when I say advanced, I mean, it's actually very simple, but it's really something that people have a hard time trusting. And here's what it involves. It involves paying attention to your guidance moment by moment without any expectation of outcomes. When I say paying attention to guidance, I mean desire. The thing that excites you the most next. And if that thing that excites you the most next is a nap, then go take a nap. When you follow your guidance, your desire, without any expectation of the outcome, as long as it is not going to harm and do damage to another, as long as it is within your control to do, which, knowing you, those are not concerns. You know, I'm not talking to a convicted felon here. So follow the desire of your heart with no expectation of the outcome. Follow it until it completes and then start all over again. So here's what that could look like practically. I need to get home to tend to my kid after a long day of work, but all I really want to do is swing by and get some ice cream. Go get ice cream. As you're getting the ice cream, you eat 3 bites, and you're like, I don't want any more ice cream. Throw it out. Now I see a store that I want to enter. Go enter the store. You walk in, you go, I don't want to be here. Leave the store. I want to go home now. I need to see my kid. Go home. That is following your guidance. Now, is there anything
literal?
Yeah. Is there anything profound that unfolded? Did it lead to anything meaningful? Did you achieve a thing that you had hoped to achieve? Did it open some? Nope, not today. That's an expectation of an outcome.
Okay.
But the more you pay attention to this, the more you'll start to see something happen. Very soon, your life becomes flow rather than effort. When your life becomes flow, synchronicities begin to appear. Things you couldn't have planned, things you couldn't have imagined, things you couldn't have orchestrated. Something bigger than you takes over and orchestrates on your behalf a beautiful experience of unfolding synchronicities, all conspiring for your good.
I have a question that is a mind question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which is, I like where this exercise is going, but a part of my brain was automatically like, but you have a calendar and a set of shit that you're responsible for.
Oh, yeah. So God, I, you know what? Ooh, okay. I am so sorry. I take everything back. Forget everything I said. For sure, whatever you do, follow that calendar as if it were the Bible. Do not alter it, because that is the ultimate truth. And that is your God. And your God is telling you what to do tomorrow. And I am so glad you reminded me of that. I don't know why I thought that. Thank you.
No, not that literal.
I know. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, I know.
But I get it. I know there's responsibilities. This is why what I'm telling you is a very advanced practice. I said it was in advance for a reason, because when you hear that, you're like, what? I'm not doing that. Like, yeah, I get it.
No, it's
really hard to do when I have real responsibilities.
I feel like it's possible. I'm just processing a little bit of like, okay. Cause I fully believe that when you're sometimes when you like operate in the unconscious a little bit, like you end up encountering all sorts of things that serve you in ways that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
But it's like how to do that given some of the constructs that life just requires, but still like leaving space for some of that. Like that's
this, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And I'm being extreme and playful for, because I know what real life is too. And I know what it is to have real responsibilities and all that fun stuff. Lots of different ways you can do this. But a really simple way to start is to, you know, just try to give yourself a couple of moments in a day. Just do it for 20 minutes. On a Saturday when your husband's taking care of the kid, you know, give yourself that 20 minutes instead of being productive and getting something done, unless that's what your desire is. If you feel a desire to go get something done and that excites you and that's the most exciting thing to you next, go do that.
Okay.
I'm not saying don't do anything important. I'm saying follow your guidance. Your guidance may tell you to do something really important. Your guidance may tell you to do something really random and kind of pointless. And it may just tell you to stand in one place for 10 minutes until you think of something next. And the way to think about that is, you know, the universe is conspiring for your good. The universe is always finding ways to deliver to you the things that you actually want. And it wants you to be in position to receive. And so if you are going to meet someone for lunch at noon and you get there at 10, you're going to be disappointed. So if the universe causes a delay in some form or fashion, it is doing so in order to bring about that perfect meeting time. So that's why you don't have to be too worried about like, well, right now, I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I need to do this or that, or I'm just sitting around not doing anything. Yeah, maybe you're sitting around not doing anything because it's just not time. Mm. And that's okay. So just be open to the ways in which that's how the universe operates. Okay. Now, again, I want to remind you, this is a very advanced practice. This is not the way 99% of the world lives or 99% of coaches and guides will tell you to live. Everyone will tell you to set goals. Everyone will tell you to get your time management down. Everyone will tell you to, and those are all great executive functions. And I'm really glad you've developed them. And I'm so happy because now you can release them. or you can apply them for certain periods of time of the day until you get to the place where you can live every part of your life that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean this. That sounds
great.
It is very possible. It is absolutely possible.
Yeah.
People do it all the time.
Yeah.
So it's just not very common. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Zach, this same thing holds for you too. I mean, this is part of my concern for both of you, is that when you are high achieving people who have accomplished a lot more than your peers with greater ease than them, you get rewarded a lot for doing what others want you to do. And in the process, you lose contact with who you really are and what you truly want. And that's what I'm interested in is, are you making contact with who you really are? And by the way, who you really are is defined by what you really want. You know, when people say, who are you? Do you know who you are? Your identity is defined by your desire. What you want is who you are. It's the one thing no one can take from you. It's the one thing no one can convince you not to have. It's the one thing that no one can convince you to have. It is the center of your guidance and the seat of identity. So pay attention to what you want. It's guiding you from that deepest place of who you are. So block some times where you just know, okay, I'm going to do it the old way for the next 5 hours. Mm-hmm. I just have a bunch of stuff I need to get done. I need to discipline my way through it. I'm not ready to trust this other thing that's being laid out to me. I'm going to do it this other way. Totally fine. You've been doing great with that all along. But if you want a quantum leap, it comes when you start releasing all of those things. You start living from a place of intuition and hunches,
yeah,
rather than directives and schedules.
And it's funny because the thing that I was going to share that was really, it's very in line with what we were just talking about, is this past week, we did a lot of communication around like this new practice I'm starting. And I talked to like lots of different levels and lots of different groups and lots of different teams across the organization, as well as, you know, it could have been to the individual contributor, to the managers, to other executives, and then the CEO. And it's interesting, like the thing that I observed was I felt the most myself in the conversation with the CEO than in any of the conversations with anyone else. And I think it's because, now that we're talking, I'm like, I think it might've actually been because I kind of like went in with the zero expectations mindset and was like, I'm just gonna read the situation, and was just in the moment and present and did so. Whereas in like all the other situations, I really did go in with a certain type of goal or expectation, or really like really wanting that in return. And I think in some instances, like, yes, that those types of things happened, I might have met the expectations, but it didn't feel as exciting or as like myself. Or as, I don't know, the a lot of the descriptors that you just used, and I was like, I wonder why that is.
So that was for two reasons. One is what you just described. The other is part of your nature. So this goes for Zach too. You're both people that, while you're very capable of operating within a political corporate environment, you're both much bigger than a corporate environment. It isn't really your nature to be corporate sort of support structures. You're both leaders. You both see how things need to be. What's that?
I had a similar situation this week that came up where there's an executive panel in our company. And I don't know, there was 600-700 people on the call, and they were going through and running numbers after we did our quarterly updates or whatever. I think it was mainly to our development departments and whatever. I didn't see that there. I wasn't even invited to the prep call. I wasn't supposed to be on it, or maybe I was, I don't know. And then this chief pinged me. He's like, hey, are you joining this prep call? I didn't see it because this whole Log4j or zero critical issue that was going on. Yeah, Robin knows. The world knows. The world's on fire. And so I didn't see it. I joined this call, and in the middle of the call, I saw the notes. And he's like, hey, I'll promote you as a panelist. I want you to present for like, I don't know, it was like 15 or 20 minutes and all these slides that I didn't create in front of, you know, 600-700 people. And I saw his note and I was like, shit, I better go find a shirt. You know, but for me, that's what I thrive on. It's like, yeah. I love that. And that's like a couple times a week. It's like, I don't mind being in front of those.
You're both that. People. You're both that. And I think you already know that. I'm just letting you know what I think you both already know, which is you're both CEO material. Like you're not really going to be truly happy until you're running the place, whatever the place is, whether it's your own place or someone else's place. You're very, both very capable and competent of climbing a ladder. But at the end of the day, your feeling of home will be in the CEO suite. Mm. And again, that doesn't mean you need to be in those companies. Yeah. I mean, you will feel more at home when you begin to guide your own life and guide your own organization. And that's just reality.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't tolerate too much that isn't a fit for who you are. And I think the more that you live from this place, the more you're going to find life is less hard, much less effort, much more flow, much more natural unfolding.
The notes that I wrote you, like I said, I'm okay with what I do for like a few more years or whatever. I don't see it as a bad thing. But at the same time, like when shit happens or if it happens, it just happens. I don't want to go out on a bad note. But, you know, I said earlier in our call today that like I'd feel like it would be a divorce, but it's like, I don't know, it's not a bad marriage. You know what I mean? It's just,
it's just not working right now. So you just got to make it work. That's all. Hey, I'm sorry to do this. I've got to run. I've got to get in the car and get somewhere by 3 my time. So I only have like 4 minutes to do that. So we are meeting, I believe, next week. Are we not? What is next week? Is Christmas next week? Oh, it's the 23rd. Do you guys want to meet next week or no?
No.
Okay. Why don't we cancel it? You may still get a reminder of it, but hear me now. We're not meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds
okay good. With that?
Yeah. That sounds good. Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Shane. Thanks, guys. Great to see you again. Bye.
Have a happy holidays.
Yeah. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah. See ya.
Bye.